Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Another day inside the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you. So is Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Eric, how were your days off following the big win on Sunday?
It was great, John. You know what? I really have to suggest that you come into the studio on Wednesdays, especially.
Oh, what did I miss today?
There's almost an entire box of pizza here left over.
Oh, God.
It's the second week in a row now. You're missing out on some good stuff.
That's all right. The food on the airplane should be good, though, right, John?
Yeah. The peanuts? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I actually, obviously today, usually on Wednesdays, I try to, you know, go into my palatial broadcast studio here in the basement of my home. Not my mother's home, as Fred would have you believe.
But, Liar.
I'm actually watching the replay. That NFL Network does of, you know, select games. And I've been watching, you know, the Jets game this past weekend. And I got to admit, you know, whatever you think about Mark Sanchez and whatever you think about the Jets, that kid's just got it. He's got the IT. And a lot of people said that about Tom Brady, too, very, very soon in the process. I hate to say it. I hate to admit it. I think he's got it. I realize it's only 3 games into his career, but I've sat here and I've watched it for the last few minutes. I'm like, man, that kid's just making plays, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, much as I just want to kick myself for thinking that, I'm coming to the conclusion that that was a very smart choice.
Well, I think you're right, John. I think he's going to be a good quarterback. I saw something a little bit far-fetched today, I thought, though. Is it Adam Schein, I think? Is that the guy's name? I think he's an NFL.com guy.
Yeah.
He does the Schein's 9 thing. That's his column.
Right.
He had don't be surprised or something like that. Don't be shocked at a Jets. Don't rule out a Jets-Giants Super Bowl. Come on.
Well, that's a little bit much.
Relax.
Yeah, that's a little much. He's just trying to build up hype in New York, and I understand why they need that. It's the number one market in the country. It's,
yeah, but,
you know, I totally understand that. They want everybody, you know, that follows New York to get all geeked over the possibility of having a crosstown Super Bowl.
The guy's played 3 games.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's good, but.
Yes. I would agree with that assessment, but you know, hey, you have to play to your strengths, and I'm sure that that's the one thing they want to do. And heck, they'd probably make a dent in the ratings, NFL.com or NFL Network or whatever, if they just had New York people watching or following. So you know, that's how big New York is, and how, you know, big an influence it is, and I totally understand that. But you know, I'm sitting here watching this stuff. And by the way, loving the Tennessee, you know, throwback unis of the Houston Oilers with the baby blue helmets.
Great. They're great.
Those are sharp. Because nobody has anything like it.
And, John, you're going to be seeing those when they come to Foxborough.
No way.
Because that's
seriously?
That's a legacy game, yeah.
Oh, that's so outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to wear the old Houston Oilers stuff?
They're going to wear those, what you're seeing right now on NFL Network replay.
Sweet. Totally.
Yeah. And then when we go to Denver next weekend,
yeah,
in about 10 days,
the old Broncos unis?
The old brown and yellow uniforms with the numbers on the helmet.
Oh, those are ugly.
Striped socks. Yeah, but I mean,
I'd rather them go to the orange helmet with the D.
Well, yeah, those are, but that wasn't what they came into the league with.
Yeah, that's true.
They didn't start in the AFL with those.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It's kind of gay.
And nobody asked you, Wes, and get back to practice.
How about a tall, skinny bench warmer?
How about you get back on the field?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness! Speaking
conversations and sound effects.
Listen, hey, I like it. It works for me. Speaking of practice, by the way, did we have anything to report yet today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Bad news first, as we always do.
Yep.
Players who weren't there: Gerard Mayo, Vince Wilfork, which I know fans are not going to be happy about, and Nick Kazier.
What's wrong with Kazier? Do we know?
It looked like he was, according to Andy. I didn't see him in the locker room, but you know those. They're like almost like black spandex type sleeves that people either wear on their arms or their legs. Now a lot
yes.
of players are wearing those. They're for medical reasons, though, I guess for blood circulation or whatever.
Right.
Apparently, Kazier was wearing one on one of his legs, so it's a lower body something that he's dealing with, whatever that may be. Hmm. That's what we can speculate from what we saw in the locker room.
Okay.
But that
Wilford's not a surprise, to be honest with
no,
you.
No, not a surprise, but that coupled with the fact that they signed a defensive lineman this week, a veteran defensive lineman in this league, Terdell Sands.
Yeah, it kind of leads you to believe
that it's maybe a little bit more serious than, you know, he was only out for the game.
Yeah, can I mention this? And I think that Mike Reese, I'll give him the credit for at least putting the thought in my head here. You know, as he, you know, blogs, still does his, you know, blog on ESPNBoston.com. But, I'm also concerned, he shared concern, reading through some of his, mailbag stuff over the last couple of days that, concerned that Wes Welker's injury may be more serious than we originally thought, that it may take him a little bit longer because he made a very good assessment of Welker's situation and that, you know, if a guy is actually, you know, thinking that he could be probable until game time, and then all of a sudden he's a late scratch. It just tells you that there is a lingering, recurring problem here, and he suspects, and again, it's just his opinion, and he has no medical basis to back this up. It's his opinion there may be some swelling going on in the knee that just keeps recurring, and it won't go down, and they just don't want to take a chance on it, and that maybe, just maybe, they might decide to put him under the knife and see if they can get him back after the bye week.
Well, I suppose that's a possibility. It is encouraging, I think, to see him at practice, even though he hasn't played the last two games. I think the fact that he's able to at least go out there and do something
mm-hmm.
means that he's not that far away from getting back to where he needs to be.
Yeah.
I mean, don't forget he played in week one. And maybe they rushed the situation, or maybe they were a little too optimistic on his prognosis because he hasn't played the last 2 weeks. But
mm-hmm.
if he hasn't gone under the knife, which obviously he hasn't yet, but and if he doesn't, that and it still continues to go on in practice, that leads me to believe that it's somewhere in the in-between zone where it's bad enough that he can't play and risk getting hit, but it's not bad enough that he can't go out there and stay sharp and practice mentally and physically. So. That's an interesting speculation, though, that Mike puts out there because, you know, obviously there's something wrong there.
There's something wrong, and I think we can.
Unusual. It's unusual for.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's an unusual situation. You don't normally see a guy practice all week and not play, especially
right.
a guy who went to the Pro Bowl last year.
Which tells me that there's a recurring problem, that the swelling is flaring up on him again, and it makes perfect sense.
Yep.
You know, I've been around the game long enough. You've played the game. You've been around the game long enough. Mike obviously has been a keen observer of the game for a long enough time to know that, you know, when things like this happen, it usually means there is something that flares up, and most of the time it's usually swelling or inflammation that flares up in an injury. Now, again, we're not doctors here. We're not playing them on the radio or the internet or whatever you want to call it, but it's just based on past history and what's happened in my own knees. So, you know, again, it's pure speculation on his part. Obviously, we hope for the better, and it could prove us all wrong if he suits up and plays this week, but you know, the fact of the matter is that I think that's something that, you know, needs to be paid closer attention to, especially in light of the fact that nobody seems to be happy with the progress or lack thereof of one Joey Galloway.
Yeah, and it's sad that after only three real games, I don't really count the preseason because the starters are, you know, veterans don't really play as much in the preseason. So we have three games, basically, to judge Joey Galloway. I mean, come on, three games. I realize he hasn't been the Joey Galloway that we saw in Seattle or even Dallas, even Tampa Bay a couple of years ago, but give the guy more than three games. You know, it's a bit hysterical that people keep writing into our Ask PFW inbox and even to mm-hmm. the shows here at Web Radio, and they you know, people's attention spans and tolerance and patience level is just so low and so short these days. I mean, that's the world we live in. We live in an instant gratification world where people want results right away or it's unacceptable. But come on. I mean, if the guy's still like this after when we get to the bye week, you know, maybe you have to think about doing something. But who else are you going to replace him with? Everyone's talking about Terrence Nunn, and he's a practice squad guy who did really well during the preseason. But, you know, a guy like Galloway, who's been around long enough, who still has speed, is a weapon, I think. Mm-hmm. He might not be doing it right now, but I think you have to give him more of a leash than three games.
Yeah, well, okay. You know what? I'll certainly buy that. I think the problem is compounded by the fact that we saw Greg Lewis make that unbelievable catch for the Vikings.
His only catch of the game, by the
way. His only catch of the game, his only catch of the year thus far. And frankly, there have been a couple
those kind of catches when he was here either.
No, which is what I mean. I mean, you know, it just, you know, we saw that, and it's kind of like, wow, you know, he kind of knew where to be on that play, and Brady's struggling to get, you know, Galloway in the right place, and we've had some bloggers and some people like that, you know, and some fan boards go nuts on it, and sure, I understand the frustration completely. I just, you know, I can't believe, though, that the Patriots would be that wrong about a guy like Joey Galloway. I mean, you know, they brought him here because they clearly thought he still had, and I hate using this phrase, but it's appropriate here, they still thought he had gas left in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, they did that with Fred Taylor, and look, Taylor certainly proved that,
sure
right?
Does. Right, right.
You know, so they thought the same thing about Galloway. I'm kind of at a loss for, you know, why he doesn't seem to be where he needs to be. I mean, you'd think, you know, after 13, 14 years in the pros that you'd be savvy enough to know that, you know, hey, if I've got to break off the route, I know where the guy's throwing. I mean, that one bugs me more than anything else.
I hear you, John. No, I trust me. I know that there's...
You're in mid-bite, aren't you?
I am. Sorry.
That's so terrible. That's worse than Fred Kirsch ever.
What, are you kidding me?
Sorry, I got to call you out on the carpet there, because I'm still here at the home studio, and you've got a whole piece of there.
He's eating the whole thing.
And Doc's not helping me at all.
Five pieces at a time.
Doc's not helping one
bit. Jump on in there, Jason. What's your problem?
I already had lunch.
You can have mine.
I still have another show to do after this.
Yeah, no, that's true.
No, but I understand your point with Galloway. I haven't been happy with the way he's played at all. But I think he deserves more of a chance in this, especially, I mean, it's not like he's a rookie. We have a resume on Galloway. We know what he can do. I mean, he had 1,000-yard seasons while he was in Tampa Bay recently. The guy can play. He's having troubles right now, but so is Brady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so is Edelman having some drops of easy passes. So is Moss has dropped some easy passes. The whole offense has struggled. The whole offense has not been sharp this year, except for short spurts here and there. The last 5 minutes of the Bills game.
That's why this
parts
whole
of the
frustrating
Jets, the start
thing
of the
is,
Jets game.
You know? Yeah, that's why this whole frustrating thing is just kind of amplifying itself. You know. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, we kind of feel like, you know, well, this team is struggling a little bit, you know, to get Brady back in the groove. And so you want guys that, you know, certainly are capable of knowing where they need to be on certain places. And obviously you're losing your best Binky and a guy like, Wes Welker. And on top of that, you know, there's a grizzled veteran in Joey Galloway who seems to certainly have speed left, but he doesn't know where to be and you're trying to line him up. You know, and God bless Julian Edelman. I mean, he's a great story in his own right, but you can't expect him, you know, to be fully taking a guy like Welker's place. You just can't.
But I think we should look at the bright side of this whole thing. First of all, they're 2-1. Second of all, there are guys like Fred Taylor, Chris Baker, who have surprised us and shown us a lot more than maybe we thought they would. Right?
Sure, I'll buy that.
The defense has held teams to fewer and fewer points each week in these first 3 weeks. And the defense, we all agree, was probably the biggest question mark going into this season.
Right. Yeah.
So eventually, the offense and the individual parts on offense are going to get – they're going to correct themselves. I'm not in any way pessimistic about that. I think that they will get to where they need to be. And while they're getting there, they've added these pieces that are working. The Taylors, the Bakers, the defense playing, you know, a little bit above its head right now, which is great. And even though they're losing players like Mayo and Wilfork week to week, and younger guys are getting experience, they're let's not forget the defense is also playing with a lot more formations than we're used to seeing. We're used to seeing that traditional 3-4. There's all kinds of different personnel groupings and alignments that we've seen already this year, and
right.
that's not an easy thing to do. And they're doing pretty well against some pretty decent teams. So I think people need to take a step back and look at the bigger picture here for a second. Yes, there are parts that aren't perfect, but when is there ever a time when there's a perfect offense? You know, 2007 isn't going to happen every year. That's as close
well,
to
why
perfect,
not?
That's as close to a perfect offense as you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
And a perfect team. But, you know, I think you can't be too down on this team right now. We're based on what they've done so far. And if they can knock off Baltimore, who's playing great.
Yeah.
The team's 3-1. I mean, come on.
Well, I would have to admit if they beat Baltimore this Sunday, and I'm still not entirely certain that I'm siding with the Patriots on this one. But if they do, you know, knock off Baltimore at 3-1, based on the opening part of the schedule and knowing what we know about the roster and the injuries and, you know, the comeback ability of Brady and all that kind of stuff, then I think I'd be relatively satisfied with that had I seen the big picture beforehand. Well, you, as you mentioned, Baltimore, let's kind of jump into that a little bit. Knowing what we have in store, knowing what this team has in store for it, what did you see or what did you not see against Atlanta this last week that you think perhaps shapes this team up well enough to have a good shot against Baltimore? Was there anything in particular that really stood out to you from this past week that might be relatable to this next week?
Well, sure. The game plan going in was a secret to nobody. Shut down Tony Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
And he only had one catch. You know, Brandon McGowan, the safety who has sort of played himself into a starting role here, joked after the game that, you know, the game plan was to not have him have any catches.
Right.
And he had one, so obviously the game plan failed. He was joking. But that was, I mean, by about the third quarter, I looked over at the guys and my colleagues at PFW, and I said, we haven't heard Tony Gonzalez's name all day. And they finally threw it. They threw to him twice, and he had one catch.
One catch, yeah.
On the whole day. So they were able, with somewhat of a patchwork defense, they only had three cornerbacks who were healthy for the game because of Jonathan Wilhite's unfortunate pregame situation. And they were able to do what they set out to do, which was shut down the main component of that Ravens offense. They made Matt Ryan, who's a second-year player, very good quarterback, reigning rookie of the year on offense, they made him look, you know, average. And he's a better than average quarterback. They made him look average. They for the most part took away Michael Turner, who's a big threat at, both as a runner and out of the backfield in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
They kept Roddy White from making big plays downfield, and Michael Jenkins for the most part shut
mm-hmm.
down. The defense shut down that offense. Now, Baltimore's defense is usually the one that gets more of the credit than the offense, but Baltimore's offense is playing pretty well now, too. They have a good fullback. They have a good quarterback, kind of like Matt Ryan. Joe Flacco in his second year could have, you know, argument could have been made that he could have been Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. They have some weapons. They have good tight ends. They might not be as stocked at receiver as Atlanta was, but they still have a decent offense. And if our defense, if New England's defense can do what they did last week, that's a good start. Now the question is, can Baltimore's strength, which is their defense, Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, you know, Haloti Ngata, those
right.
guys, can we do enough on our? Can our offense click in time to do the things necessary to beat the pressure that we're certainly going to see from that?
Yeah, the guy that worries me, I think, the most would have to be up the middle with certainly Lewis, but Ed Reed in particular, the secondary. Other than that, I mean, you know, while I think they've got some decent pieces to the puzzle, and we'll get into this, by the way, a little bit more in depth in hour number two of the program is Jerry Sandusky, who's the voice of the Baltimore Ravens. He's going to join us here inside the playbook, and we'll take a little bit more of a personnel look at the Ravens then. But the guy, you know, on offense, they don't really scare me. I mean, Joe Flacco certainly seems to be in that Mark Sanchez mode. In other words, you know, young quarterback, a lot of talent, not doing things to beat himself, ability to make plays. I think he's got a big, strong arm. But you know, the receivers don't scare me, although, you know, why can't we get guys like Kelly Washington, you know? I mean, he's found a role for himself there, so I think that's really kind of cool. Ray Rice, I loved him as a player when he was in college ball at Rutgers, and I think he's a tremendous pickup. I think he should be a solid pro, even though he's undersized, but he's just got the ability to run. He's kind of like, he reminds me a little bit, believe it or not, of a player about 30 years ago by the name of Robert Newhouse. Do you remember him?
For the Cowboys.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's built low to the ground. In fact, he's a little smaller than Newhouse. I think Newhouse is about 5'9". And he was more of a fullback type, but he was built low to the ground where when he ran low, man, it was just hard to get underneath that guy and knock him off his feet because he had such a low center of gravity. And I think Rice is in that mold where he's got a low center of gravity, plus he combines the footwork and the quickness with just out-and-out speed. So that makes him dangerous as a back. I think, he, you know, even though he's small, it looks like he's going to be a keeper for a while.
Well, you know, I think the trend in the NFL is you know, and we've seen it for the last few years, is smaller, stouter type bowling ball size backs. You look at Maurice Jones-Drew in Jacksonville. You look at even guys like, you know, Joseph Addai isn't the biggest guy in the world. Trying to think of other you know, impact players. D'Angelo Williams down in Carolina. These are smaller backs who they might share the load with a few other people on the team, but, you know, I think that's another trend, too, that people aren't just going to one big feature back who pounds it out all the time. You rotate. LaDainian Tomlinson isn't the biggest player you've ever seen either, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Ray Rice doesn't surprise me. Watching his tape coming out in the draft last year, we really liked him. I thought he was, you know, I thought that was a good pick by the Ravens, and actually had him picked as my offensive rookie of the year in our preseason predictions because you weren't sure about McGahee and his knee situation. I figured, well, he might get a lot of playing time. He might have an impact. You know, I was a year early with that, but he's certainly proven that he's more than capable and obviously won the starting job over McGahee this year. So I think you're right. I think he's a dangerous guy, a lot like Michael Turner was this past week with the Falcons.
Well, I think the reason that McGahee is probably going to continue to be more effective for Baltimore, even though he still looks like he's capable of being an every down back, but he's going to be more effective simply because they don't have to use him all the time. Rice has, you know, given Baltimore a reason to sort of almost use McGahee in specialized situations, which might prolong his pro career.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like I said, that's sort of a trend we're seeing around the league now where it's not just one back. You get two or three guys who can rotate in and out of the game, and you always have a fresh set of legs, and you have guys who are maybe, you know, look at this team, Fred Taylor, who's in the latter stages of his career, but he ran for 105 yards the other day, 5 yards a clip, you know, and that part of that was because he didn't have to. You know, he did get most of the carries that game, but Kevin Falk was in there. Sammy Morris came in a few times. You share the load, and it becomes less of a burden for each of your individual parts, and that's better as a whole for your offense.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, I think Rice certainly and Flacco in that backfield is, you know, younger second-year players. I think that bodes well for the future for Baltimore. I also think that one of the things that I talked about almost, you know, extensively yesterday on the show, Eric, was the fact that, you know, the Patriots defense has to be considered one of the bright spots through 3 weeks, that, you know, we're getting, I think, more bang for the buck, literally, than anybody really had a right to expect, especially when you consider Seymour was let go. So, now that we've seen what they've done, again, I'm not sure entirely that 3 weeks is a proper, sampling to be able to get a real picture, but based on what we've seen thus far, there's nothing about Baltimore's offense that scares me to the point that I don't think our defense, that the Patriots defense, can't handle it with some kind of an adjustment. Agree or disagree?
I agree with that. Absolutely. It's the other side of the ball that worries me a little bit. And that's, you know, that would have been the case even if New England's offense had been clicking the way we hoped in these first three games because they just have such a good defense. But, yeah, I agree. I think even though they're a little bit banged up, there's some, you know, a lot of new parts to this defense on the New England side. I think they've shown that they can do enough to handle a team like Baltimore's offense, which is, No, like you said, not the scariest one that we've seen, but they just have to take the same approach they took this week, where this past week, where, you know, Atlanta's offense was seen as a scary threat. We thought this game was going to go into the 30s for both teams, a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they held them to 10 points. So, you know, they had the perfect game plan against this team, and they executed it. It's just a matter of, will they have the same sort of execution this week against Flacco?
You have to hope that they can't. But who's to say that they can't do it? I mean, the other impressive part about the Patriots' defensive performance has been just, you know, solid, steady, almost uninspiring, but I think, you know, it's almost the nature of the beast. It's kind of like what we saw from Mayo last year. It's been Guyton's play at middle linebacker. He's, you know, he may not be quite as speedy, certainly as flashy at times as a guy like Mayo may be, but I've been real impressed. And I also talked yesterday extensively about how I think Brandon Merriweather is going to be, you know, if not the emotional leader, he'll certainly end up being a leader, period, on that side of the football. He just seems to be able to have that knack for, you know, kind of picking up and charging guys up and everything. And, you know, we were laughing yesterday about, you know, the Young Jeezy song, how the guys were dancing to it, and he and McGowan and Pierre Woods joining in during that timeout. Right after they had scored a field goal, you'll recall, make it 16-10, you know, I think it was late third quarter, early fourth, somewhere in that time frame. And, you know, it was during the television timeout. Nobody had a chance to see it, and if you were watching on television, but we all saw it in the stadium, and I was laughing, and I'm thinking, that's exactly what they need. And so those guys all seem to be kind of like, you know, kind of rubbing off on each other a little bit.
Doc's playing it in the background.
Yeah, right, yeah, I hear it.
Are you dancing?
I'm telling you. I don't know if it's
right
just the song or what, but, you know, you just kind of have a little bit of a swagger, you know?
I can picture you doing this, too, during the timeouts.
Jacked up!
Right? You don't think people are looking. You're sitting back there in the booth. You know, you got the window open. You can hear the noise, right?
Yeah. This yeah, it gets me going, I got to tell you.
I'm sure it does. it's funny, you mentioned Merriweather. I think he is one of those, you know, he's played at the U. He's a little bit of a fiery guy on the field.
Right.
You know, he's kind of not so much off the field, but on the field he's definitely one of the louder guys on this defense. And he's, you know, has more of a visible sort of vocal role out there.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that I'm writing a story about him this week, too, is guy I mentioned earlier, Brandon McGowan. He was a, you know, he played at Maine for 4 years, went to the Bears, and had sort of an injury-plagued few years there. Had some starts, but was mostly, you know, mostly off the field for them. And when he did play, he played fairly well. But in just a short time here, he's become one of Bill Belichick's favorite players. I mean, he's overtaken, it seems, James Sanders as the starting free safety. And I was talking to Bill the other day during his press conference about him. And, you know, Bill brought up the fact that he made the forced fumble against Atlanta the other day.
Sure.
And he said, and the way he described it, he said, you know, there aren't that many players in the league who could have made that play the way he did. And he's a guy that I think we need to look out for, maybe not as in a leadership role, but just for the fact that he's taking over a starting spot after two games, because against the Jets he was in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
and he did so again this past week against Atlanta. I think he's just, you know, with all the new pieces that we've talked about on both sides of the ball, he's a guy who we haven't really talked much about, but he seems to be having a pretty big impact pretty quickly.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think this is all good, positive stuff. No question about that. We're not getting to the point where we hoped. I think originally this defense would get to the route that we thought it was going to get there. You know.
Yeah, well,
I just caught you in mid-bite again,
you did,
didn't I?
You did, but again, it goes,
you need to go like give Eric. You got to give me a high sign or something here, buddy. I'm not trying to bust you.
No, but again, it goes back to 2001. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
they weren't a good team after 10 games. I mean, they were okay, but they were 5-5, and then they ran out the string and won the Super Bowl. So to say that after 3 weeks. You know, sure, things aren't exactly where we want them, but there are enough positive signs that I'm not overly concerned about the direction that the team is going at the moment.
All right, I'm going to let Eric finish his pizza, or at least a slice of it here. So let's take a break, a quick break, and then we're going to come back and jump back into the breakdown of Baltimore. And again, second hour of the program, Jerry Sandusky, who is the play-by-play voice of the Ravens, he will join us here in the playbook. You can join us as well, as always, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. It's the Patriots and it's the Ravens coming up this Sunday, and we're talking it over right here in the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush, but you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got
it? Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member FDIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape serving trays.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
We'll be right back.
Back inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. And again, Jerry Sandusky of the Baltimore Ravens, their radio play-by-play voice, will join us in the next hour in approximately 30 minutes. So you'll definitely want to be here for that. We'll jump into the Ravens, who, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, Eric, and I don't know if you even believe in such things, but I think it's actually kind of fun because it gives us a chance to talk about it. And it's really just a gauge from week to week on relative strengths. The Ravens were ranked number one, I think, in the ESPN.com power poll this week.
Oh, they were. I didn't happen to see that.
Yep.
How many? Where was Atlanta last week? Do you happen to remember?
Atlanta actually was slightly ahead of the Patriots. The Patriots were 9. And I think Atlanta was 6 or 7, because I don't have it in front of me. I'll look it up here in a minute. The Patriots rose to number 7 this week.
And the Jets?
The Jets are 6, by the way.
They are 6 right now?
Yes.
And I would assume after their impressive win in week 1, they were pretty high up on the list, too.
Correct.
So it seems like to start the season, they've been playing teams in the top 10 in the power rankings.
Yeah, pretty much for the most part. You'd have to say, yes, they are. So, again, even though it may not have appeared to be this way before the start of this season, the Patriots' opening 7-week salvo is actually a fairly difficult one.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about it very early in the season. I'm looking at 5-2, and I'll be happy at the bye week. If they're 5-2.
Well, I'll give you full credit for that one. You had to talk me, down out of the tree after the first week when I said 5-2 wasn't good enough. Now I'm thinking, man, if they can get through this stretch 5-2 at the bye week, this team's in great shape. They're in great shape. If they can get to 5-2, they're in great shape.
Yep. I mean, obviously the Jets will still be a problem for them.
I'm not concerned with the Jets because you still have them on the schedule.
That's right. That's right. So, and the other one that's looming larger now after the bye week, obviously Indianapolis always is a big game, even, especially when we play them in Indy. But that New Orleans Monday night game, if New Orleans keeps playing the way they have been, my God, they're going to be a scary team to face no matter how good you're playing on defense.
That would be entertaining. We might have a 50-40 game in that one.
Well, you hope that New England's offense will be able to do that kind of thing.
Well, I just listen. Point, can you imagine? I mean, that would be. I mean, all the TV people would go nuts over something like that.
Oh,
that'd be a game that could be talked about for years.
Oh yeah, a Monday night game.
Ugh.
Two good winning teams. A season. I mean,
absolutely, yeah, and two teams that like to wing it, man. I mean, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah, if Drew Brees stays healthy, that offense is. That's going to be a scary.
If Tom Brady can get back to being the old Tom,
yeah,
that's the thing we need. I say we. It's tough for me to do this. I guess I get a paycheck, so I guess it's all right to be the collective we here. Mm-hmm. But if the Patriots, find a way to, figure out a way to get everybody healthy back in the field, I think you need Welker and, mm-hmm. And you need Brady back in his mess, and you need a guy like Galloway to be contributing in some form. But if they're able to get everything, back on the same page here, what a dynamite game that could be.
Yeah. John, did you talk at all yesterday about the fourth down call against Atlanta?
You mean going for it on the 24-yard line?
On their own 24. Did you talk about that at all?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, that to me was a that was a combination of two things. Number one, the Patriots certainly felt like, hey, Atlanta's not a big team. We kind of feel like, we've been doing a good job of pushing around a little bit in the running game. We think we can pick up a yard. That, and I do think Belichick was sending a message to his guys saying, I'm confident in your ability to get this yard even though we're backed up.
Yeah, and the reason I bring that up is because, Bill said Monday when asked about it that he wasn't trying to send a direct message.
I'm not buying that.
Well, for the sake of argument, I'll buy that argument. I'll say he wasn't trying to send a direct message, a big picture message. But I think that was that ended up being the result of it. I think the players took it as a message. It was a small thing. They only needed, less than a yard. They needed inches basically to get the first down. But they were in their own 24. How many coaches do you think would have even considered going to the line and trying to draw Atlanta offside?
Zero.
Right. And Bill didn't even hesitate. He went out there, didn't even send the punting unit out there. He kept the offense out there, and they called a play and ran the play. And usually in that situation, you think, oh, Brady quarterback sneak off one of the guards or whatever. They handed the ball off, too. I mean, it's a small thing, I think, but it gave the offense something that it had been lacking to that point, which was confidence.
Yes.
And Brady has not been himself. He hasn't been sharp. He hasn't been on target. But after that play, there was another fourth down on that same drive where he hit Moss perfectly down the sidelines for like a 21-yard gain on a fourth and three.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a perfectly placed pass. And then later in the game, in the fourth quarter, he hit Chris Baker with the touchdown, which was, again, a long pass play that was right on the money. And I go back to, I think that might have been a turning point, that fourth and one, where the offense may have been thinking too much or I don't know, whatever has been wrong with them. I think that fourth down call is going to have repercussions for the rest of the season. I think we saw a little bit of that in the remainder of the Atlanta game.
So, you know, where seasons usually have seminal moments somewhere buried in the middle of a season where, you know, the season's fortunes turn literally on a single play, you think that was a seminal moment?
I think it could be. If the offense shows progress this week and continues to get better, I think we can look back to that play and say that's where it started.
Wow.
And I think I think it's mostly mental. But I think when you're struggling, a lot of times feeling good, feeling confident helps you play better. And I think that play, all the guys in the locker room were talking about it after the game, saying how they fed off of Bill's confidence in them, and that gave them more confidence as an offense. I mean, you know, it's still the NFL. There's still good players on the other side of the ball. It's
right.
Not a guarantee that you're going to pick up half a yard to get a first down.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they did it there with the game still in doubt, it's not like the game, you know, it's not like they were up 20 points and it was kind of safe and there was only 2 or 3 minutes to go. Then you say, all right, he's just trying to run out the clock, whatever, it's no big deal. It was 16-10.
Yeah.
If Atlanta stops them and they get the ball back, you know, potentially they go in for a touchdown, they're winning the game all of a sudden.
Yeah, right.
Even a field goal, you cut the lead from 6-3, you get some momentum. You know, it was a huge turning point, and I think the fact that they hadn't been playing well and Bill still made the call to go for it said to them, look, I know you guys haven't been playing well, but I have faith in you here on out, and we're going to prove it right here, right now.
And so this team...
He might not have been trying to send that message intentionally, but I think that's the message that was sent and that was received.
No disagreement there. It seems then what they're trying to do then, Eric, is they're slowly trying to build up a little bit more of the confidence factor here. I'm a little puzzled, I guess, as to why maybe the coaches, if this is what they're doing, why they felt like this was a necessary thing to do at this stage, because I would think, you know, that, you know, that was sort of already ingrained within, you know, the organization. But then again, when you figure it out and you sit here and you think about it a little bit, it's kind of like, well, you know what? They have had quite a bit of roster turnover, you know, and we've talked about that already since the start of the season where they've gotten younger and turned guys over on defense. And so there aren't as many guys who've been around for as long a period of time as some of those grizzled veterans who are used to sort of going through the motions. And so you almost have to do something to boost the confidence of some of these players who haven't been around for as long a time. And I think you're probably right in respect that, you know what, this is something that he felt he needed to do to make sure that everybody was on the same page before people could, you know, start letting doubt creep in.
Right. And regardless of whether there was turnover on the offense, there, as you know, as far as, you know, new players coming in, old players leaving, the fact that they weren't playing well was evident to everybody, including the players. They talked about frustration, about, you know, Brady not throwing the ball well, about the receivers dropping passes when they were open, about letting too much of a rush get to Brady, even though he, you know, he wasn't sacked much, but he was getting hit a little bit in the first couple of games. That sense of frustration and self-doubt, like you said, starting to creep in, going forward in that situation, I think they needed something. And what perfect time. It wasn't planned. It was a spontaneous thing. You never know you're going to come up with a situation like that mm-hmm. in a game. And it just happened. And his gut reaction was, I trust you guys. You can do this. And I think that's going to prove to be a key point in this season.
All right. Well, I tend to think that he was being sly like a fox, and that's one of those moments that, you know, you just kind of look back on and you say, you know what, you know, Bill probably knows what he's doing in this particular instance. And even though as you've already said, he professed to not, you know, have any real thought process behind it. He just kind of felt like, hey, we can make a yard here. It has, you know, further reaching effects. Got an email here, Eric, from Johnny in L.A. talking about the whole Galloway versus Nunn thing, as we were referring to just a short while ago. And he says, my very brief take on the Galloway versus Nunn thing is give Nunn a shot. Unproven, so what? So was Pierre Garçon, and look what he's doing with this opportunity in Indianapolis. Only top-tier quarterbacks like Manning and our own Brady can bring out the potential in the Nunns and Garçons of the world. So why not let Nunn, or why let Nunn rot on the practice squad any longer? Even if he gets his chance and has absolutely nothing to offer, we haven't lost anything, because that's what Galloway has given us so far, absolutely nothing. So there you have it. Terrence Nunn, a wide receiver who is so good he could actually be the next Pierre Garçon.
Well, I mean, it's a good comparison. Pierre Garçon was a Division III prospect coming out of college last
Correct.
Year.
Yes, correct. Mount Union, right?
Mount Union, right, exactly. And, you know, not a lot of experience in big-time football, but the Colts took a chance on him. He had a good combine. One of our sleepers when Andy and I went to the combine last year, and we both liked Pierre Garçon. So it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit different in that Nunn came from Nebraska, and he was, you know, that school's second leading receiver of all time. He's played against good competition. He has more experience. I see John's point. You want to give the kid a chance. I wouldn't say he's rotting away on the practice squad, because
no, he's still developing. They're still he's still practicing. He's working out. I mean, right. You know, he's waiting for his opportunity.
And again, it's week three. Well, now we're in week four, but we've had three games so far this season. It's too early to be panicking about, oh, this guy's not doing well. We got to do something. We got to make him relax. There's time. There's still time. The team is still 2-1. Their best football is ahead of them. Even Joey Galloway, I want to give him more of a chance. I know I said it at the top of the show, but I think he deserves more of a chance given his record in this league. I think he, you know, again, by midseason, if he's still struggling, if he's still dropping passes, if he's still not lined up where he's supposed to be, if he's still not reading the defense properly, then maybe you make a move. But at this point, I think it's too early to pull that trigger. And in the meantime, you let Nunn get more reps in practice. You let him get more comfortable in the offense. Remember, he's a rookie who didn't play football at all last year. He had a year in between college and the NFL.
Right.
Nobody wanted to sign him last year. So technically this should be his second year in the league, but it's still only his rookie year. And he's only, you know, he had a few, you know, he had the four preseason games for game experience, and that's it. But
by the way, I find that amazing. I can't believe that somebody didn't at least take a free agent flyer on him.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while a player slips through the cracks. Even a guy like him who was, you know, had a...
Who the heck is his agent? And he should be flogged.
Well, I think that was the story. I think he got a new agent afterwards. But I don't think it wasn't so much the agent as far as it was, you know, he just... It's sort of inexplicable how a guy who's had that much productivity in his college career.
I mean, second all-time leading receiver in Nebraska? Mm-hmm. I mean, I realize Nebraska's not,
doesn't,
you know,
throw the ball,
I mean,
much, but still, you're the second leading receiver in any school's history, especially one that, you know, is a storied history as Nebraska. That's pretty
right.
Impressive.
Sure. I would think so. I mean, I realize Nebraska throws it all over the place now, but I just the fact that he fell through the cracks, and obviously the Patriots have him, you know, when we saw him play this summer, I'm kind of like, wow, where the hell did this guy come from? Is he a rookie? Did he play for Nebraska last year? And, of course, you research and you say, no, he didn't play for Nebraska last year.
Right.
He sat out last year,
and
which,
you know,
to me is just remarkable.
It could just be unfortunate timing where maybe last year he was going to be a free agent, a rookie free agent regardless. But maybe the teams that needed receivers, maybe there was more of a crop of free agent wide receivers last year. Maybe this year there were fewer of them and there were more of a need for teams or whatever, but he got to go back to Nebraska's pro day and work out a second time for pro scouts. That's how the Patriots got wind of him again and gave him the shot. But, you know, again, he's definitely still in the developmental stage, and I wouldn't want to rush his development and try to throw him into the fire too quickly if we don't have to. And right now I don't think we have to. I think you give Galloway the chance for a little bit longer and let the kid continue you know, to get used to this offense, to get used to the system, get used to being with Brady. And, you know, if he legitimately deserves a shot and is better, it's only going to be a matter of time before he winds up on the roster, if he's really that good. And Bill and the coaches know whether or not that's the case. Like with McGowan, as we were talking about before.
Yes.
He's clearly made that jump quickly, and he's jumped ahead of James Sanders.
Yeah, McGowan has also been a pretty good find. I mean, when you consider that, you know, he was a free agent that apparently nobody really wanted. The fact is that, you know, the Patriots, as we all know, this is how they've built this franchise throughout this decade, picking up guys on the quote-unquote scrap heap, even though that's a little bit graphic and probably not entirely appropriate. But in effect, other people that, you know, were picking up people that other people did not want, and they've developed these guys and worked with them and given them the confidence in their own abilities and really turned them into something.
Right, and as with any team, a lot of these are system fits where, you know, like a guy like Mike Vrabel, who we picked up in 2001, wasn't the right fit with Pittsburgh with what they were doing.
Right.
But he was a perfect fit for what New England was doing here and made a great career out of it. If he had stayed in Pittsburgh, who knows? He might not have been the same Mike Vrabel that we know today.
Hard to believe he wouldn't have been a fit in Pittsburgh eventually.
It is kind of hard to believe, but again, it's the system. So you look at a guy like Nunn, maybe he doesn't fit in someone else's system, but he does here.
Although but he didn't fit in anybody's system.
He didn't fit in anybody's system, right. But the guy has shown me that when you throw him the ball, he catches it. And you never see this kid drop the football.
No, never did. Never saw him have one drop in the summer, through the preseason, which was amazing. Just absolutely amazing. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania, sent this email about Welker. He said, can you tell us where did Wes Welker get hurt? Was it minicamp, training camp, preseason, or running away from his house while someone was yelling at him?
Oh, come on now. Leave Will Hyde alone. That's a shot there.
Listen, Mike in Erie needs to understand, that's a real problem that a lot of these guys face.
Absolutely.
You know, when you know, people that they evidently don't know, and, you know, I mean, that can be scary. And I said yesterday,
and we still don't know all the details of that.
We don't know the details, but you understand now why, you know, players like Plaxico Burress do stupid things and carry guns where they shouldn't be carrying them.
Right. Yes.
You understand why it happens. Doesn't make it right.
Right.
It just gives me understanding as to the thought process going into this.
We talked about that when after the Bills game in Week One, when who was it? Leotis McKelvin had his house vandalized by some, you know, thugs who didn't like the way he, you know.
Well, it turns out to be teenagers that, you know.
Well, still, it's you don't know that though at the time.
No,
and it's frightening. You're right. So, but anyway, back to
Welker.
To the Welker thing. He hurt himself during training camp because he was I can't remember the exact time that it happened. You know, whether it was practice or a game. But it was definitely in preseason because he sat out a little bit of time there and thought he would be ready in time for Week One, which, you know, they thought he was, and he played in Week One. But I just can't remember whether it was one of the preseason games or a practice. I'm drawing a blank on when it was, but it was definitely in training camp. It wasn't in mini camp. It wasn't in the spring. It was this summer. It was August. Sometime in August he hurt himself.
So. Did we have any idea, did he do it running a route? Did he do it getting hit? Do we have any other?
I honestly don't remember what the
circumstances. Because I don't remember it happening either, so that's why I'm kind of asking you. I mean, you were there at most every day.
Yep.
Few times that I saw him, you know, nothing ever appeared to be to me out of the norm.
Right. And, you know, it could have been a situation where it could have been a situation where you don't see anything visibly on the field that would make you think, oh, a guy's hurt. Like, he didn't roll to the ground and lie there in pain like Will Fork the other day. It was obvious he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got up after a few minutes and walked off. It could have been a thing where, you know, sometimes guys get hit and you don't really feel the effect of the injury until later. You know, so he could have, for all we know, continued to play another, you know, couple of plays or whatever. And then later after the game, he said, oh, you know what, this thing's not feeling right. So it's kind of hard to tell whether or not that happened at any one particular time because there was nothing that stood out. And we said, oh, boy, Welker's hurt.
Yeah.
You know? Unlike, you know, a couple of years ago when Moss, when he pulled the hamstring and missed all of training camp, mm-hmm. most of training camp, we saw when that happened. And we said, uh-oh, he's hurt, and he limped off, and he got stretched, and then we didn't see him. We knew exactly when that happened. with Welker, it could have been a, you know, it might not have hurt too badly when it happened, but then afterwards, you know, so it's a little hard to tell. But we do know that it happened in August.
You don't think this could be a chronic problem with him, do you?
From here on out or up?
Or I'm just talking
up
about
to this point.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be one of those durable guys that has never really had a problem before. But, you know, if you have something that just kind of lingers, you know, the chronic thing can happen. So I think that's my major concern is that this is going to be something that would come back and continue to bother him this year. If they think that, you know, cleaning out or scoping or whatever is ultimately going to be what happens here, I think they should just go ahead and shelve him and do it now. And then hopefully get him back, say, after the bye week.
Well, I'm going to err on the side of they know what they're doing with them. I mean, I think we should give the medical staff the benefit of the doubt and say that they're doing what they think is you know, the proper prescription for him, whatever it is that's wrong with his knee. And, you know, we'll see. He was out there practice again today. If he practices again tomorrow and Friday and then comes out in the game on Sunday, then, you know, maybe.
Well, then it may be a moot point. But if he practices like he is today, comes out again tomorrow, he's out there warming up on the field, and then they scratch him late again, what good is that going to do?
Well, then maybe at that point it'll be long enough that they'll have to make a decision.
Well, exactly. And why are they even letting him practice if there's a doubt that he would play? That's the one thing, I guess, that I don't get. And that's the
we'd have to talk to a medical pro about that, though, because none of us is qualified to say.
I would agree with that. But here's you know, the line of questioning, I think, for a guy like Coach Belichick. I mean, honestly, you know, he's been scratched the last 2 weeks with an injury, but yet he's continued to play during the week, and then he's a scratch before the game. So why is he practicing?
We also don't know. I mean, John, we're only allowed, as you know, we're only allowed 20 minutes of practice viewing.
Correct.
Half of that is stretching. Mm-hmm. So we really get to see a minuscule portion of practice. If a guy is out there at practice when we see him, that doesn't necessarily mean he's doing everything for the entire 2 hours of practice, hour and a half of practice, however long it is, that day. Because when we get the injury reports, it says limited activity or full participation or did not participate. So we could be seeing him for the time that he is participating, and he's getting just enough. And then maybe he's not taking part in anything else after that. We really don't know because we're not there to see it. So
well, then
it may look like
it's a legitimate. I think it's a legitimate question to ask Belichick. You know, I mean, honestly, you know, hey, Welker's out there. That's great. Good news. I mean, are we to assume then that, you know, he's able to play? You know, you could certainly phrase it like that.
It's certainly a legitimate question. I don't think you're going to get any sort of an answer that you're looking for.
Of course not. We know better. But still, you have to ask the question. I'm just and if he doesn't play on Sunday, then why the hell did he practice? You know, that's the thing that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, maybe you have to give the player some credit for wanting to be out there. And maybe you give a guy like Welker, who certainly, you know, leaves his blood, sweat, and tears out on the field better than maybe anybody else on this team. Maybe, but I mean, don't you have to look at it from the good of the team? I mean, and we know how valuable he is to this offense.
Yep.
Fact is,
don't
is they were able to overcome his absence this last week. They weren't able to do that, frankly. And we had an emailer bring up this point. I also think we had a phone call bring up this point either earlier this week or late last week. Fact is that if a healthy or if Welker was out on that field against the Jets, that might have been enough to make a difference.
Might have been, yeah.
Might have been.
Might have been. But, again, Brady wasn't throwing the ball all that accurately in that game either, so it might not have had a difference.
True.
It's hard to second guess in those situations. But
yeah,
there's no doubt having a player of his caliber on the field is going to help you. I don't know if it would have been enough to win the game, but it was certainly would have helped the offense.
Well, let's get your thoughts on the matchup with Baltimore before we let you skedaddle and get off to what you've got to do for PFW this week. Fact remains is that Baltimore comes in at 3-0. They're at the top of at least one of the power polls that I've seen this week in the NFL. So they're playing as good a team football as anybody in the NFL this week. They've got to come into Gillette to take on a team that, you know, certainly looked better against Atlanta and maybe allayed a few fears over the overall development of the Patriots throughout the course of the season last week with the win over Atlanta. How do you kind of look at how this thing will break down?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about it earlier. I think that the offense certainly is going to have its hands full with Baltimore's defense straight up the middle with Nada on the line, with Lewis in the linebacking core, and with Reed in the backfield there. No matter where you try to attack this defense, it's going to be tough. If New England can put all the pieces together this week, there's certainly ways to exploit with all the weapons that New England has. There's certainly ways to exploit the Baltimore defense. It's just a matter of, can Brady throw accurately? And when he does, can the receivers hang on to the ball? Can they use their backfield by committee, you know, in the screen game or you know, however they feel that they can best attack that line, whether it's pounding it straight at them or, you know, getting them out in space. They certainly have options. I just haven't seen them play good enough football for an extended period of time in any of these three games that I'm that confident about it yet. But the potential is certainly there. On the other side of the ball, I think it's a lot like last week, where I think they have they've shown they can do enough to combat a guy like Flacco and some of the weapons he does have. It's not as potent an offense as Atlanta. We've said that already, but it's a pretty very even matchup here, John. I think New England's defense might not be as good right now as some other teams, and Baltimore's offense, thankfully, isn't as good as some other teams. So that's a pretty even matchup, mm-hmm. And I think the level that Baltimore's defense plays at is equal to the level that New England's offense can play at. So it's a very even matchup there too. Probably a low-scoring game, teens, maybe 20s at best. But I think it's going to be very competitive, very close game, could come down to the end.
Yeah, I'm tended to kind of think that way myself, and I'll try to come up with a pick here before the end of the program today. But I actually think this will be a very low-scoring game. Yeah. I think this will be down in the low teens.
Yep.
Just because I think both teams' defenses, and again, based on what we've seen of the Patriots' defense, I just think that they, you know, in theory can match up well with what Baltimore presents on offense. The question is whether or not the Patriots' offense can move and score and be effective against a Baltimore defense. That, to me, is the big key that overhangs us all right now.
Who did you end up going with last week anyway? I don't think
I took the Pats. I took the Pats in a close one.
Mm-hmm.
But I said the Pats by a field goal last week. They ended up obviously winning by more than that. But, you know, Mr. Hart selected Atlanta last week.
Yes, and he had other reasons too, because I don't know if he told you, but he challenged Fred on the TV show, the PFW TV show, that if Atlanta won, Fred had to wear a one of those white tank top undershirts that has a sort of a derogatory name associated with it. I won't say it on the air because I know some people might be offended by it, but Fred was supposed to wear that if the Falcons had won.
Okay.
And so Andy was really rooting for Atlanta to do that just for that reason.
Okay.
But obviously he wanted the Patriots to win. But if they hadn't, that would have been a comforting side effect of that. But
yes.
It didn't take place. So
good.
Hopefully he's not going to make that same prediction this week. I don't ever want to see Fred in one of those.
No, scary sight.
For any length of time.
Absolutely. Eric, as always, thanks, buddy.
No problem, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You got it. Thanks.
All right.
Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Coming up, let's take a time out here. And then coming up, Jerry Sandusky, who's the voice of the Baltimore Ravens. He will join us. Don't forget, your emails are welcome. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is how you reach us by phone. We're in the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey! Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football.
Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America N.A. member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Back inside the playbook, and I guess we're getting ready to run down a dream, so to speak, this weekend with the Baltimore Ravens coming into town. Let's get into what the Ravens are all about. Jerry Sandusky is their play-by-play voice on WBAL in Baltimore, and he joined us now inside the playbook. Jerry, thanks so much for the time today. It's greatly appreciated.
John, my pleasure. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. You know, I've noticed that the Ravens seem to be now getting a little bit of that respect factor going for them. They're at the top of the ESPN.com power rankings this week. Do you guys put any credence in that at all?
You know, the Ravens as an organization prefer to be overlooked than overappreciated. They've never been the kind of guys that kind of feel great in the spotlight of love. They much prefer to have people look at them and say, oh, you're not this and you're not that.
Well, the fact is, I think people are taking notice of a team that seems to be, at least at the very on the surface, rounding into some pretty solid shape. Why do you think that is? What's gone particularly well, in your estimation, for this team that was a question mark, say, a month ago?
Well, I think the biggest question mark all preseason, all offseason, was the receiver position. And even a team that has four guys that most people have kind of looked down their nose at, Joe Flacco's had great success with all four of them. Kelly Washington, former Patriot, has been, I think, maybe the biggest X factor on this offense. He's such a good possession receiver. He gives Flacco another target over the middle. And that with a complimentary three-back attack in the running game, plus Joe Flacco's development. I think those are the three things that have made the Ravens in 09 different than any other Ravens team we've seen before. And you'll notice I'm talking about offense. When was the last time somebody talked about the Ravens' offense?
Yeah, that's true. You're known for defense, and obviously the defense is still pretty solid.
Yeah, you know, they had some troubles in San Diego with some deep ball coverage, but they felt comfortable. Those were just a couple of mistakes guys made on big plays. There wasn't any sign of underlying problems. They shut the Browns down, no problem. Now, it's not fair to compare the Browns' offense to the Patriots' offense, apples and oranges. But I think the Ravens feel very comfortable with their defense. They feel like their defense is what it's always been. And the fact that they have a much better offense, it gives their new defensive coordinator, Greg Madison, a little more latitude in being, you know, risky, aggressive. He knows the defense doesn't always have to win the games, and that's changing the culture a little bit.
Well, I think that's important because to be a team that can go deep into the playoffs and maybe even contend for the Super Bowl, and certainly I think Baltimore knows this from practical experience as well, you have to be well-rounded. Certainly you have to have a championship-caliber defense. I think we can check that one off, at least at this stage. But offensively, you've got to be able to score. You've got to be able to work yourself out of tight jams. You've got to be able to move the football. You've got to be able to hold on to it against the clock. A lot of different things that you need to be able to do. You also need to have big play capability, and it looks like you might have at least the potential for some home run hitters developing there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to watch Joe Flacco. His accuracy as a passer, you know, he's not. You cannot yet say Joe Flacco is in the elite league with a Tom Brady, with a Peyton Manning, even with a Phillip Rivers. But you can now see in this first three games that he clearly has the potential to get to that level. You know, when Derek Mason, a guy in his mid-30s, becomes a big play threat, that's because the quarterback is finding the right times to go to him. When Kelly Washington, who caught one ball in 2 years, mm-hmm. is suddenly, you know, leading the team in receptions, that says a lot about the quarterback. The other thing that just starting to scratch the surface, Todd Heap has resurfaced as a big playmaker at tight end. And we saw L.J. Smith for the first time last week, the former Eagles tight end,
right.
who adds an explosive element, again, to this offense in between the hash marks, something they really have not had before.
Well, Todd Heap, I think, is certainly familiar to fans in these parts. So is L.J. Smith, for that matter, just because of his East Coast presence overall, not only with the Eagles, but playing collegially at Rutgers. So I think that those are names that are familiar. Would you call Heap an elite tight end or a solid tight end? An underachieving tight end. What's
Todd,
his?
Todd, I would say you have to slot Todd above, you know, average and serviceable, and just below the elite tight ends, the Tony Gonzalez's, the top Pro Bowl guys. He's been to the Pro Bowl twice, and he might be returning to that level. But, you know, for the last 2 years, he's fought through injury-filled seasons. The key thing with Todd is he's doing the little things now that don't show up in highlights. He's a much better blocker than he was 3 years ago. You know, he might not be as explosive and as breakaway in some of his routes, but he's a more rounded tight end than he has ever been before. And that is, that's adding to the running game, which, you know, as I watch this matchup, I'm intrigued by the fact that both of these teams are so capable of controlling the clock. And Todd Heap's a key part of that for the Ravens.
You're not in anybody's way in the traffic, are you?
No, I was just trying to clear things. I was looking for that big lead block through the A gap, but I couldn't find it, so I had to create it for myself with a horn.
Attaboy. Way to go. Spoken like a true Bostonian on that one. Get out of my way! Appreciate it. Jerry Sandusky, who again calls the Ravens games on WBAL in Baltimore, joining us here inside the playbook. Ray Rice has obviously developed, I think, a little bit more quickly than people thought he could, being a somewhat undersized running back. But I made the comparison a little earlier in the program today to he's built low to the ground, almost like a Robert Newhouse was for the Dallas Cowboys a few decades ago. What about Ray Rice has impressed you the most?
I think his confidence in his quickness. When he came out of Rutgers, he knew he was quick in college, but I had a conversation with him very early in his rookie year, and he still wasn't quite sure if his quickness would translate at this level. By two-thirds into the season, he had that confidence, and then this year, he knows that in the open field, he is still as talented as he needs to be to get by cornerbacks, to get by linebackers. He has that confidence that guys get usually in their third or fourth year. It came to him early. And one of the things I think that makes him a guy who gives the Ravens some depth and some versatility, he doesn't have to be the every-down back. You know, if Willis McGahee gets running, Cam Cameron goes with Willis McGahee that day, and Ray Rice doesn't have to carry the ball 25 times. And I think that's really going to benefit him as his career unfolds because he's not going to have to – he doesn't have the body to be a 30-carry-a-week guy.
Is there any surprise that Rice has supplanted McGahee as the primary guy?
Not really, because in a sense he hasn't. Yes, Ray Rice is the starter, but you know Cam Cameron will tell you that's fine for depth charts and that's fine for play-by-play guys and fans. But in reality, Cam doesn't look at Ray Rice and Willis McGahee as a one and a two. He looks at them as guys that he's going to get going early in the game, and whoever has the hot hand, that's who's going to get the ball. And Cam has a philosophy that some guys just have a better fit against certain defenses, and you don't always figure that out until the game starts. So for the last 2 weeks, McGahee's actually had bigger Sundays than Ray Rice. And the season opener, Ray Rice had the big game. So, you know, I think as this season unfolds, you'll find that they are pretty much equal in terms of productivity.
Significant to note here that you brought up the name Cam Cameron several times. Obviously, folks around these parts realize him as a failed, and some would say he didn't really have a full chance, but a failed head coach of the Miami Dolphins. What has he meant to this offense's development in your estimation?
Oh, he's the MVP. You know, Joe Flacco will make millions of dollars down the line as a quarterback. Ray Rice is going to be a star. Willis McGahee's career has been reborn. But none of it reaches the level it's starting to reach and will ultimately reach without Cam Cameron. He's the first offensive genius they've ever had at the Ravens camp, to the point where Trevor Price, the several-time Pro Bowl defensive end, was talking about Cam Cameron this week in awe of the fact that he sees Cam Cameron do things in games that the Ravens don't even practice. He said, you know, I feel bad for some defenses because Cam Cameron just has a strange intuition that he can figure out things on the fly in games like the defensive players have never seen around here before. So, believe me, in Baltimore, we don't look at Cam Cameron as a failed head coach. We look at him as an absolute blessing sent to Baltimore from the Miami Dolphins.
Sounds like he might be the kind of guy that could take a couple of bottle caps and a few sticks and draw up a play on the sideline.
He really is. You know, he's a great coordinator in all the classic senses of being organized, of having a great offense. But I think what separates him from other people is he just has that intuition of, hey, this wrinkle on that play will work great at this point in the game. So let's set it up now, and maybe we'll even trade missing on a third down conversion to set up a play we're going to need in the third quarter. He has as good of a sideline feel for an offense as any coordinator I've come across in the last 10, 15 years.
All right, well, now that we've seen offensively and some of the improvements, let me also suggest that I think a guy like Matt Burke, who's at center, to me, I mean, he's been one of my favorite linemen, if you can have a favorite lineman in the NFL, just because he's a smart guy. He's a six-time Pro Bowler. He's a guy that probably gets it done almost as well as any guy who snaps a football in the league. And that's got to make it easier for guys like Ray Rice and Joe Flacco and even Cam Cameron, for that matter, to be able to game plan around.
And it makes it easier for those young tackles, Jared Gaither on the left and Michael Orr, the first-round pick on the right, to be in the huddle every play with a guy who knows every situation and who's been through it all. I think the development of the Ravens' young tackles, a lot of that goes to Burke because he just has such a presence about him. You know, if you took a black and white shot of Matt Burke, you could say, oh, yeah, clearly he was a 1950s football player.
Yeah.
If you made it sepia tone, you could say, oh, yeah, definitely he was a 60s football player. Mm-hmm. If you gave him some wild colored shirt, you could say, oh, clearly he's a 70s. He's the kind of guy who could fit in the NFL at any point in time because he does all of the fundamental things well. He controls the tempo at the line of scrimmage. He makes the right calls. And he just, he has that presence about him that great football players have. Hey, by the way, it doesn't hurt he was educated at Harvard, right?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. First and foremost, he's a Harvard guy, so obviously he's smart and, perhaps even coaching material on down the line if he chooses to go that route.
He might be ownership material down the line. He's that smart.
I believe that. That's why I think he's probably been one of my favorite players, if you can have, like I said, a favorite offensive line. Let's flip it over to the other side, because that's obviously what Baltimore seems to be known for, defense. Now, when Rex Ryan moved on, and obviously we've seen what Rex Ryan is capable of doing by what we've seen thus far with the Jets, Greg Madison came in as the defensive coordinator, as I guess he was, the linebackers coach previously?
Right.
What has he done differently? Has he done anything differently that you've been able to notice with the Baltimore defense over the previous couple of years?
About the only thing you'll notice that's conspicuous is in a lot of third and long situations, you'll see a four-man front from the Ravens. Rex Ryan, you'd always see at most a three-man front, and then he'd blitz six or seven off of that. You'll see more of a traditional four-man rush from Greg Madison in classic passing situations. Doesn't mean he won't blitz off of it, But beyond that, most of the players say it's the same package, it's the same philosophy. I think what we'll find is as this season progresses, the linebackers, the secondary, they'll get a feel for how Greg likes to call a game. You know, Rex developed the nickname as the mad scientist,
mm-hmm.
much like we're starting to see with Cam Cameron on the offensive side, where he might rush. You know, I saw this scenario actually happen last year down in the red zone. He rushed one and dropped 10 into coverage. You know, nobody does that. But Rex would do that kind of stuff. And as this season unfolds, John, I think we will see the defensive players get a feel for what Greg likes to do in the third quarter, what he likes to do in a tight game in the second quarter. And those are the things I don't think any of us have a real feel for just yet.
The defense certainly seems to be stout in all areas. Where's the Achilles heel? And I know you're not giving away any shop secrets here, but in your estimation, what is the part of that defense that could use the most work right now?
Well, I think the next-door neighbor for Ray Lewis, Tavarius Gooden, he's only had three starts. He needs some polish work. He's going to have to develop some consistency. He makes some big plays, but then he'll make some mental mistakes like any young linebacker. You'd like to see that. The secondary is starting to get a cohesive feel to it, but with a new starter in Dominique Foxworth, there are still times where you can see they don't yet have that nonverbal communication that great secondaries have, where a corner looks at a safety and they know what adjustment to make. That's an area they need to develop. And then the big concern for the Ravens defense, John, I would say, is can they avoid getting old up the middle?
Mm-hmm.
You know, injuries could make this an old defense. You have Kelly Gregg, who's well into his 30s now at nose guard. Trevor Price, well into his 30s at end. Ray Lewis, well into his 30s. And Ed Reed, now 31. So, you know, injuries could age this defense right up the middle quickly. And to me, that's the main concern.
The thing that's impressed me most about the Baltimore defense was against the Chargers, holding them to 0-for-5 in the red zone. That's extraordinary when you talk about that kind of an offense. And, of course, you're probably aware the Patriots have struggled in the red zone.
They have, and, you know, three games in, I don't know how accurate numbers are in terms of trends, but it is a trend. It's interesting you bring that up in conjunction with Greg Madison. That's one of the things I'm watching as this season unfolds, whether the Ravens evolve into more of a bend-don't-break defense. You know, Rex Ryan was a don't-bend and sometimes break on big plays because, you know, you're rushing 10 guys or you're dropping 9 guys into coverage and doing crazy things. I'll be interested, and I kind of have a suspicion that as this year unfolds, you'll see the Ravens perhaps be less statistically overwhelming 20-20, but more statistically overwhelming in the red zone. I think we might just be getting the first glimpses of that.
Interesting. So maybe a little slight change in philosophy there.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what every coordinator brings unique to the job of, you know, what is he willing to risk in terms of reward? You know, mm-hmm. maybe Greg Madison isn't willing to risk quite as much as Rex Ryan would on a 2nd and 4 from the opponent's 45-yard line, but has perhaps a little more sound strategy when it's 2nd and 4 at the 16.
Well, defensively, I know that one of the other things that Baltimore has been known for is their ability to stop the run. And I think the streak is what now, 38 games without allowing a 100-yard rusher. Longest one in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. It's 38 in a row, and that is one area that has not changed in the least. Job one has always and is still stop the run, and the Ravens will pour their resources into the point of attack, especially early in the game. They will set a tone of, you're not going to run on us, so you're going to have to throw on us. Now, you know, for some teams, that's a nightmare. For the Cleveland Browns, that was a disaster. Once they had to put the ball in their quarterback's hands, that game was over. For the Patriots, not quite so much of a problem because Tom Brady has that magic going on.
Well, we don't know yet how much of that magic he's got going on. He's been overthrowing some receivers, much to the consternation of people around here. I think everybody feels like at some point in time the rust will wear off, but at least for right now, that's not a given.
Well, you know, and I've watched all of the Patriots games this year, and I'm sure if you are a lifelong Patriot fan and you've seen Tom Brady year after year, week after week, do just, you know, the crazy, remarkable things he does, all the comebacks, all the precision. His accuracy is legendary. But you know what? You can't have that kind of accuracy after missing a full year.
Right.
Well, I'll give you an example that I saw firsthand that really reminded me how competitive it is at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, when Jamal Lewis went to jail for charges, when he came out of prison, he was not the same player that entire season. Now, here was a guy who I thought was one of the most superior physical specimens in the NFL, and it hit me right then. If you lose a little competitive edge at this level, whatever the case might be, you're going to see a significant drop-off in your productivity. So for Tom Brady to miss 15 games last year, rehabilitate his knee, have to reestablish his timing, I can promise you this. In Baltimore, for Ravens fans, there's nothing that scares us more than the prospect of him regaining that timing perfectly this week, because I suspect somewhere in the next 3 weeks he'll get it back.
Yeah. Finally, Jerry, I just noticed going through the roster, your kicker is from Needham, Massachusetts.
How about that?
Stephen Hauschka?
He did his undergrad at Middlebury College in Vermont.
Right.
And then he went to NC State for his last year of eligibility. But, yeah, he's a New England guy.
I think that's remarkable. So was he a Patriots fan? Do you even know?
I don't know. I just kind of presumed he was because he was, you know, he was born there, he was raised there. But we're definitely going to find out this week if he grew up rooting for the Pats. I can promise you this week he will not be for obvious reasons because you know he's a guy, Hauschka, who is really not that focused. I can promise you on the Patriots per se. He's more focused on making people forget Matt Stover in Baltimore.
Yeah,
you know, he's that guy who, you know, like when the Orioles had to replace Brooks Robinson at third base. Matt Stover is the only kicker we've ever had here, and every time Hauschka kicks, you can feel 70,000 people simultaneously thinking, boy, if he misses this, you know they're going to call Stover.
Yeah.
So he's a guy who wants to kind of distance himself, not so much from his roots as a childhood football fan, but as a guy who wants some distance from the ghost of Matt Stover.
Right. Well, I think Patriots fans can somewhat empathize simply because that's what Stephen Gostkowski went through here trying to replace Adam Vinatieri, you know, looking over his shoulder.
But the only difference, John, the only difference was Adam Vinatieri couldn't come back tomorrow if the Patriots wanted him.
And Stover could?
Matt Stover's still out there. He's unsigned. He's still a free agent and kind of waiting in the shadows if needed.
Wow. Jerry, sure appreciate the time today. Very, very thorough. Great conversation. Safe travels up here. We'll see you on Sunday.
Looking forward to it, John. Thank you.
Thank you. It's Jerry Sandusky, again, who's the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Hopefully that provides you with a little bit of insight as to how the Ravens are shaping up coming into the game for Sunday afternoon. Frankly, here's what worries me the most, and we'll take a time out here in just a moment and regroup and remind you that webradio@patriots.com is the email address if you have some comments or thoughts on the conversation we just had in breaking down those Baltimore Ravens. What concerns me the most, we touched on it just briefly, is the fact that the Ravens defense, when it comes down to, you know, shutting a team down, they are doing that in terms of red zone defense. That 0-for-5 performance that they forced San Diego into to me a couple of weeks ago was pretty doggone remarkable when you consider the kind of offense that San Diego has. Their three wins were over the Chiefs. It's kind of a lackluster game, 38-24. They beat the Chargers then on the road, no less, in San Diego. They beat them 31-26, which sort of opened up some eyes a little bit. Maybe give you the idea that, hey, you know what, Baltimore, don't sleep on these guys. They could be good. And I know that they may not have been one of those teams getting a lot of run in the preseason, although I know that there were several that really liked Baltimore going in, but because there were some X factors with new coordinators, like we've talked about, and, you know, Joe Flacco, sophomore season, how good is he going to be? And there were some X factors there. But going on the road and beating San Diego, that eliminated some of those for a lot of the quote-unquote experts that are out there who follow the NFL. And then, of course, the Browns game was kind of a throwaway game. I mean, 34-3. Cleveland is in as bad a shape as anybody in the entire league right now. And I saw where Eric Mangini is actually going to go with Derek Anderson back at quarterback this week. And it's a mess.
I'm excited to be a head coach.
Yeah, well, he should be excited to have a job, I think, right now. But the combined record of those three teams that Baltimore has beaten is just 2-7. So when Jerry Sandusky tells you, yeah, I don't know how much stock you can really put on 3 weeks worth of numbers into the season, he's absolutely right. So I'm just kind of giving you the other side of the story. But the one number that stands out to me is holding the Chargers 0-for-5 in the red zone. Chargers score once in that red zone. They win that game against Baltimore. One time. Well, it had to have been a touchdown. They scored a field goal in the red zone. It still wouldn't have been enough. But you get the point here. They held them when it counted. They bent a little bit, did not break. That has been the Patriots' defensive moniker over the last few years. You know, bending a little bit between the 20s, but when it gets to the red zone here, the Patriots' defense has been able to come through more often than not. That's why the Pats, that's one of the reasons the Pats have been as successful as they have been throughout this entire decade. And it looks like Baltimore's taking on a little bit of that personality now under Greg Madison, their new defensive coordinator, who, of course, stepped in for Rex Ryan, who's now the head coach of the Jets. That concerns me with the Patriots' struggles in the red zone on offense. That concerns me. Now, it could be that this week they'll turn it around. Could be that this week they'll figure it out. They'll do more than just kick three in the red zone. Maybe. I think we had better hope so. And they'll have to turn it around against a team that right now is playing as well in red zone defense as anybody in the league. You know, I was undecided. I was absolutely undecided as to what I thought the score of this game would be. I thought maybe going in today before we, you know, I'm sitting here getting my thoughts together before the show today and thinking, you know, I really don't have a feel. I'm not sure where this is going to go. I think it's going to be low scoring, but I just don't know who's going to win. I gotta look at this a little bit more closely. And now that we've kind of gone through the program here today and we've talked it over with, you know, Eric, and we've talked it over now with Jerry, and you know, I'm reading through some of my other notes here, and I hate to say this, kids, I think I've talked myself into a Patriots loss. Ah, man. I don't want to say
that. You're doing this again?
I know. I think I've talked myself into it.
You were all jacked up a little while. Do I need to play that song again?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to get out a little Young Jeezy here again. Oh, but I'm thinking, you know, like I told Eric a little while ago, yeah, here we go. Oh, God. Now, see, Jason is going to try to turn me on this one. I don't know. I'm thinking, wow. I'm thinking 16-13 Baltimore. Yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. Tell me it ain't so. I don't want to do this. But my initial impression is that, again, it's going to come down to who is going to perform in the red zone. We haven't seen anything from the Patriots offense thus far. And until we see it, how can we plan on it being there? That, you know, what sign have we gotten, have we received from this offense that would tell you otherwise? And I would say you haven't. Yes, they kick threes. Yes, a couple of passes were dropped by receivers in the red zone from Brady last week against Atlanta. Yes, 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 I get that. But they still didn't do what they needed to do. I think you and I both realize that that 26-10 win last week should have been about 35-10. Should have been. And it wasn't. Okay, I don't know what the guys are going to say tomorrow. Tomorrow's the show, you know, on PFW in Progress when they do their picks around the NFL. And I'm guessing that, you know, everybody's going to say Patriots are going to bounce back, make it two in a row. Baltimore doesn't have enough offense. Patriots win a close, hard-fought game. Doesn't it seem like we're saying that every week? Jason, you have to tell them tomorrow, okay, during the pick segment. You have to tell them. I'm taking Baltimore 16-13.
I'll mark it down.
Okay. I hate to do that. 16-13? 16-13. I hope that I'm wrong. Obviously, I hope I'm wrong. You know, I took the Jets a couple of weeks ago, and I was right about that. I took the Patriots last week, right about that. So far, I'm 3-0. You know, in picking the games, even though the Patriots are 2-1, because I've picked the right winners. I want to be wrong on this one because this would tell me that the Patriots are still and deserve to be right at the top of the league, one of the elites, if you can beat the team that right now may be the hottest thing going in the NFL. Again, it's after only 3 weeks, but, you know, right now I think the Patriots are going to need a little bit longer. They may need another week or two or three, or they might even need to the bye week before they work out all the kinks and knock off all the rust on offense. And especially with Welker. Now, if Welker is healthy, Welker's really the X factor for me, because he's the kind of guy that can drive that Baltimore defense crazy with those short intermediate routes and just kind of nickel and dime and dink and doink a defense to death. If Welker goes, how about this? How about I adjust this just slightly? If Welker goes in the game, Pats 16-13. If Welker is inactive, Ravens 16-13. Are you buying that one? Can we agree on that one, maybe? Hope you don't have to write that down, Doctor. But, you know, I believe that strongly about Welker's presence against Baltimore's defense. So I guess we'll have to find out. We'll have to wait until Sunday to find that out. All right, let's pause here for a timeout. And then we're going to let you hear from Patriots quarterback Tom Brady in his conference call from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. If you have some thoughts, still some time for some emails, webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here in the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush, but you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
A blue
See, he's still trying to get to me here. He wants to say it ain't so. Come on, get pumped. Welcome back inside the playbook as we get ready to wrap it up here. Just a program reminder for you, as Jason alluded to earlier and I mentioned on yesterday's show, I won't be here tomorrow because I'm getting ready to hop on a plane to head to Morgantown, West Virginia. I've got the national radio duties for Colorado at West Virginia tomorrow night from Morgantown, West Virginia.
Bet you won't hear this song down there.
No, no, probably not. Might hear a little John Denver, you know, Country Roads in Morgantown. Not that that's a bad thing or anything. But, you know, in case anybody's interested, if you're not around the TV and can watch it on ESPN, you can hear the game streamed for free on BigEast.tv. So there you go, a little plug there for the effort. And that way Jason can check up on me and make sure I'm not slacking. So that's where I'll be tomorrow. And I've actually got the Pittsburgh at Louisville game on Friday night as well. So I have two games this week, two, that I've had to get ready for, which is actually kind of cool, doing two games in 1 week. And that game will also be streamed on BigEast.tv. So, and again, no cost for that. So that's what's going on for me this week. Christopher Price from WEEI.com is going to be in studio tomorrow, sitting in our chair here to quarterback the playbook. And I had a chance to talk with Chris and do a couple of Patriots Friday shows with him. And he's very knowledgeable, right on top of this team, and I'm sure he'll take you right through it. And then I'll join you again next Tuesday after the Baltimore game. And, of course, yes, I will be there for the game on Sunday. So, you know,
and we'll also hear from a gentleman named Stash, who does the Baltimore Ravens pregame show on their radio network and is also a sports talk show host down in Baltimore.
Stash.
Stash.
Okay. Interesting. All right. And, of course, Russell Baxter will be here tomorrow as well. Correct?
Of course.
Yes. Russell is always on Thursday. So, yeah. All right. So then you'll have that with Chris Price tomorrow here in the playbook. Yep, at 2 o'clock Eastern time, so make sure that you give Chris his due because he's very good in covering this football team, and make sure you give him the same things that you'd give me, other than, you know, a load of crud. not that you do that. Nobody does that. You know I love hearing from you. Mike in Erie, PA writes back. He said, do you think that maybe Atlanta's defense didn't think the Patriots were actually going to run a play and the Patriots could have caught them off guard or just trying to not be fooled into going offsides? You know, Mike, it actually dawned on me that that might be what the Patriots were doing, that they were actually trying to draw them offsides because, you know, they're on the 24-yard line, for goodness sakes. But, you know, give the Patriots credit. They felt like they could make the yard. They made the yard. You're right. Maybe Atlanta didn't really believe the Patriots were actually going to just try to stuff it up the throat, and then that's what they ended up doing. Patriots showed some moxie right there. And so, as Eric Scalavino mentioned earlier here in this program, that could end up being a seminal play to where this whole season turns. And if there's some success, perhaps as soon as this Sunday against a team like Baltimore, I think we'll look back on that 4th-and-1 play against Atlanta as being a point in time where you thought, you know what, maybe this team does have it after all. We'll find out. Couple of other quick emails I want to share with you. This one comes from Brad in Maryland, who says, why the Pats play calling doesn't include more swing passes to the running backs? I was screaming for some swing passes against the Jets, and they never did. Then last week, the first play was a swing pass to Morris, and bingo, 19-yard pickup. With the Ravens being great on sniffing out screens, I think swing passes might be needed to get out running backs in space one-on-one against a linebacker or a safety. I think that's actually a pretty good call, Brad. I was kind of wondering that myself. A lot of that, I think, had to do with the fact that Morris wasn't entirely healthy. So, frankly, I think that that's a great call. Now, Baltimore's defense is also known for heavy pursuit. And I think we all realize that a guy like, you know, Ray Lewis in the middle there, certainly capable of that. So the Patriots might try misdirection. They might try some delay screens. They might, you know, try to swing it out of the backfield as long as, you know, depends on the read. But I actually think that's a pretty good call. I, for one, would also like to see that. So a good call by you, Brad. Dale in Bedford, Mass says, nevermore. This one is also scary like the Jets game, except it's a home game for the Pats. New England will need to run the ball when inside the 10 early in the game, I think, and then take their shots. This time I think the Pats win because they get it going early and they hold on. Hard to guess what a team will do against the Pats defense, but I'll guess a score of 27-21 Patriots. Not that low scoring, not that high scoring. I've also been right the past three games. Okay. Can't wait for the game. All right. So he's going to kind of go the other direction on that. Can't say that that's, you know, a huge surprise. I still just don't get the impression that it's going to be that high score in a game. I really don't. I'm wondering. I see it much lower scoring than that. I think both teams should struggle in the red zone against each other. It may very well be which team can outkick the other, and you're talking about Gostkowski against the rookie kicker from Needham, Mass for Baltimore. You know, and that's where I think the Patriots' edge could possibly lie if they get into that kind of a situation. You know, with pressure on a rookie kicker, you never know sometimes how that rookie kicker is going to react. You know, that could end up being an X factor. See, Jason, here I am. I'm trying to talk myself back into this a little bit now.
You're trying.
I'm trying. I'm really trying. And I usually don't like to do this before Thursday, but since I won't be here tomorrow, I kind of felt, you know, like I should probably at least give this is my impression right today. As of, you know, 3:55 p.m. Eastern time on a Wednesday. And we still have 3 days of practice to go.
That's all right. When the Patriots win on Sunday, I'll be sure to remind you of this prediction numerous times throughout the game in your ear.
That's okay. That's okay. Believe me, I will be very happy to be incorrect. And I hope people jump all over me next week, you know, send me emails. I told you, no faith, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. This is what I'm thinking as of right now. And because I won't be here on Thursday, well, that's my fault. So I had to make a pick as of today. Tomorrow I might feel differently. Tomorrow I might feel different. All right, let's wrap up the program today then with hearing from Tom Brady. Don't forget, coming up in just a few moments here, Shop Talk on Patriots.com Radio with Christina Acra and the guys from the Pro Shop, and give you the latest on the Patriots goods that you can get into and giveaways and all that kind of stuff. So that's coming up here just after the top of the hour. But we'll leave you today with the conference call that Tom Brady had with a member of the Patriots media and also with Baltimore's media, his press conference, I should say, from earlier today. And then Chris Price back in the playbook tomorrow o'clock, 2 o'clock Eastern time.
Nice to see you guys today.
Nice to see you as well.
Yeah, we're 1-0. We got to keep this tradition going. I kind of like, I feel comfortable here. Sorry?
How'd the second half feel Sunday?
Well, we executed better. So I think that shows up. We moved the ball pretty well, I think, throughout the day. Just for you.
Think so.
It's all about getting in the end zone. So we're gotta do a better job of getting the ball in the end zone and scoring touchdowns.
What are the challenges of the red zone? What's been the problem?
Execution. You know, I think there's guys open, there's plays to be made, and we're just not making them. So we all got to do a better job focusing on the techniques down there and how we're trying to execute and ultimately go out there and make the plays.
How tough is it to prepare for the Baltimore defense in particular, and then knowing that Ed Reed is out there to fool you any chance he gets?
I was hoping he'd take this week off. So, he's tough back there on quarterbacks. It's like he leads the league in interceptions every year, which is tough to do when every team goes into the game thinking like, all right, we're not throwing Ed Reed interceptions. And he does. He just makes some spectacular plays, and he's fun to watch from a quarterback standpoint because you really appreciate what he's able to do. So it's a great defense. I mean, he's one of the leaders, obviously, Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs. They've really got some playmakers over there, but Ed's as good as anybody.
How do you remember your last meeting against those guys in 2007? They almost wrecked a perfect season.
Yeah, it was a great game. It was kind of a windy, cold, blustery night, and tough to throw the ball, and we had some plays there we could have made early in the game, which would have helped us out. But they hung in there, and they really played well offensively that night. They kept us off the field quite a bit. So we had the timeout that was called on the quarterback sneak, which I still claim I heard the whistle, and then the fourth down play where I scrambled, and then the one to Jab where he caught it. So it was awesome. It was a great. Every time we play them, they're so good and talented. It's always a close game. So we've got our work cut out for us. They're 3-0 now. So it's going to be as tough as game we played.
Tom, people talk about the similarities and the schemes. What is the difference there? And Coach also said that Baltimore had the difference is players. What do you see between them and the Jets?
I mean, it's not the Jets. It's definitely the Ravens. They They have their own personality, their own style, and they have playmakers, that guys, really instinctive players. I think that's what sets them apart from why they probably lead the, like a Twitter account or something. They got like, you know, they got instinctive players at every position. So they can really disrupt offenses because each of the guys has their own unique quality to the defense. A guy like, you know, Ed Reed, for example, who just covers up so much in the passing game. So, and Ray Lewis is so instinctive. And I mean, that fourth down play he made against San Diego was an incredible play. So you always have to be aware because it could be any guy at any time.
Do you really know, how do you combat it? You know where Ed Reed is every single play. That's what Bill was saying.
Yeah.
One got you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't break the huddle and think, you know, let's just run this play without, you know, seeing where he's at, because he'll be exactly where he's supposed to be. And it may not be where the defense was called to be. He'll be where the ball is. And that's what makes him such a great player. It's things where it's not really his responsibility, but he makes the play on the ball. And then when you think, okay, well, you know, he's really undisciplined back there, and then you try to take advantage of it, and he's right where he should be, you know, playing his responsibility. So it's, you know, we always say there's guys that guess, but he's got that guesses, but always gets it right. So to me, it's not really guessing; it's more knowing.
So what do you do, like, with them on the field?
I mean, you could, you know, but if it's not like a good pump fake and a good route combination that he recognizes, he doesn't go for it. You know, you don't really fake him out too often. I'm sure he watches a lot of film, but he studies receivers and splits and route combinations and studies the quarterbacks and the drops and how we're looking, and he watches their own rush. So, you know, when the rush is getting to the quarterback, he's sitting on routes and jumping on them. He does everything back there, so he's really something to watch.
If it's not Reed, then you've got Lewis.
Yeah, and he's great too. I mean, he's great in his own way. He's just at a different level. He's, you know, in that second level of the defense where the linebackers play and controlling the run game, and very disruptive in what he does there. He's been a great player for 13 years, and that hasn't changed. You watch him this year, he still plays with a lot of enthusiasm. He's really rallies those guys too, so. There's no plays off for us.